Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. The Doug Gottlieb Show is proudly brought to you by Farmers. At Farmers, we've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything when it's game time. Have an experienced player help you stay ahead of the game. Put their experience into play at Farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, ba, bum, 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 bum.
We have an amazing show for today. Let me quickly give you the guest list. Brought to you by Cindy Katz, LLC. I don't know if it's really LLC or INC or whatever. Cindy books our show. Ryan Music is the producer. We have an unbelievable crew here. Part of what makes this not only an incredible afternoon show on the East Coast, midday show on the West Coast, but one that I put up against any show nationally covering sports across the United States, including, you know, Clay, Dan, Colin, and the shows on different networks. Matt Money Smith, who, if you know LA Radio or you know the NFL Network, he works for the NFL Network, but LA Radio, they are a, what's the word I'm looking for? Not franchise, they are an institution. They're an institution in Los Angeles, Petros and Money. He's also the Chargers play-by-play man. He's got a lot of jobs, but one of the voices of LA sports, Money Smith, will join us in about 30 minutes. We'll talk LeBron. We'll talk the Clippers. I think both are a fascinating conversation. John Collins of the Hawks will join us. He's had an outstanding year. We'll get his thoughts on how far away the Hawks are from being relevant. They're fun to watch. And with a couple exceptions, Trae Young has been outstanding since the All-Star break, and they play at a great pace. I think Collins is actually their best young player. Get his sense for what this is like. Plus, I want to get his take on the other teams in the East, because it's not like he has to worry about facing any of them in the playoffs, right? Who does he think the best team in the East actually is? Chris Mannix is going to be our guest, NBA insider for Sports Illustrated, and Michael Lombardi will be our guest, former NFL GM and, of course, an author. So we got a lot to get to. But let me start with last night at Staples Center. That was weird. Right? That was weird. Because if I told you, hey, a all-time great player playing for the Lakers passed Michael Jordan on the all-time scoring list, you would say, well, they stopped the game. They had dignitaries coming out. Everybody tweeted something out. Everybody released glowing statements about that player. It must have been an amazing night. And it was kind of the opposite of it. Now, part of this deal with LeBron James is he's basically been married three or four times. Four times to three different people. Marries the high school sweetheart in the Cleveland Cavaliers. Then gets a divorce and goes and marries, like, the sexy hot salsa chick in Miami. And then decides, all right, enough playing around. Now I want to go back, move back home, have some kids, dig some roots. Plant some roots, right? Not dig some roots. Plant some roots. And then this is kind of like a second marriage, but it's really the fourth. The second marriage, you go out to L.A. and you meet the new woman. But the problem with the Lakers is the Lakers have been married to plenty of other stars. Right? And so last night was almost like a wedding or some sort of celebration. You know, a life anniversary for a life well lived. And you're sitting there going like, hey, this is a really big thing. You're like, yeah, but this is like your fourth marriage. You didn't score any of those points with us. You didn't win any of those championships with us. And by the way, we've had all-time greats. Look up top. You want a second set of record? There's Cap Skyhook. That's the record to go after. Assist. That guy's up there in Magic Johnson. And oh yeah, by the way, look around. There's 16 banners. We want number 17. I walk away feeling bad for LeBron James. Because, and any of us who have moved to Los Angeles, moved to Southern California, experience this. LA is great. It is great. I live in Southern California. I live in Orange County, which technically is not Los Angeles and has a different vibe than LA. But there are a lot of similarities. And having moved from Connecticut twice to Southern California, both times I experienced the exact same thing. There is nothing you cannot do in Southern California. Nothing. You want to ski? Hour away, max. And with all the rain that we've had, it not even an hour away, but unbelievable snow an hour away. And you go 2-3 hours away, and you got great slopes. You want to surf? 15 minutes away. You want to go to Mexico? You can get in the car. You can get in the train. You get on a plane. You can be in Cabo in no time at all. Vegas, 45 minutes away on a flight. It ain't even hard. You can take a chopper there if you want. You go up to Santa Barbara, and you feel like, you know, an inland from Santa Barbara, some of those areas, there's vineyards there. Like, you feel like you're in Greece or in Italy. There is nothing you cannot do. You can make movies, or you can be a nobody. Put a hat on, grab a Starbucks, sit outside, read a paper, and nobody bothers you. But you know what? Everyone has that opportunity. And because everyone has that opportunity, everybody's doing their own thing. This is you go from being the biggest fish in a small pond to a really big fish in a really big pond. LeBron James is not the biggest star in Los Angeles. Coming to LA was a big thing. I'm not trying to diminish it. But he's not the first and won't be the last to move his shop from the Midwest to Southern California. It's a tale as old as time. And so I think that his assumption was he would go there and plant his flag and, hey, I signed for 4 years and we're going to win. We're going to make a championship and he would be beloved. And from the moment somebody put up a mural to somebody being dumb enough to deface a mural, it hasn't been that great. And when you get home, your kids are at new schools, making new friends, playing with new AAU teams. Your daughter's in a new preschool. Your wife's figuring out new friends. Who's real? Who's fake? Everybody has a million things going on. You don't live near your teammates because you're LeBron James. Back when you're in Cleveland, maybe you didn't live near your teammates, but they weren't that far away. You had your compound and people could come over. You knew everybody. Everybody knew you. You kind of had your rhythm. And though it grows tiring to do the same thing over and over again, and the idea of there's not that many things to do in Cleveland. But you know what happens when there's not that many things to do? Everybody does things together. It's a snow day. You throw on a movie and everybody gets on the couch. You don't have that in Los Angeles. Especially when you're new. You think it's going to be awesome. It's going to be like the movies. It's going to be 75 and sunny. I got a surfboard hanging out. There's babes everywhere. This is going to be amazing. I'm going to Hollywood. I'm going to go to the best restaurants. I'm going to go to the best clubs. My kid's going to go to the best schools. Everybody's a star. I'll just fit in. Sounds great. Here's the deal. Everybody's kind of into themselves. Everybody's kind of got their own thing. Everybody's trying to attain their own status, not feed off of yours. And last night had to be, if it hasn't previously been, an eye-opening experience for LeBron James. And I actually feel a good amount of sympathy. I grew up in City of Orange, which is as average a town as you're going to get in Southern California. The downtown has the Orange Circle. And if you've seen the movie That Thing You Do, you guys ever seen that Tom Hanks movie? Ooh, that, you know that thing you do? Okay, the opening scenes were supposed to be in Erie, Pennsylvania. That's actually Orange, California, my hometown. There's a growing school there, Chapman University. It's got like 7,500 students. It's pretty cool. But it's not Anaheim. It abuts Anaheim where the stadium is and where Disneyland is. It's smack dab in the middle of Orange. And when I grew up there, there were a lot of orange groves there. There's some people live in the hills, and there's some people that, you know, are living in apartments and shanties and day laborers. There's a little bit of everything. It is lower middle class at best. And so when I moved back, I think my wife, who's from Oklahoma, and we lived in Connecticut, we lived in Oklahoma, we lived in Russia, we lived in Israel. Her thought was surfboards, babes, good-looking dudes, everybody just chill and relax in the California dream. And the first 6 to 9 months, both times. She hated it. Didn't like it. Even though when we lived in Connecticut, she grew frustrated with the weather, the taxes, the roads, which were basically cow trails from the 1700s that people paved over, could become tiresome and even tedious. The mixture of people from New York and Massachusetts, the massholes from up north, and the New Yorkers from down south, into this Yankees Red Sox rivalry that we didn't care anything about. You end up yearning for that normalcy. Change is great, transition is hard, and eventually I think LeBron will figure some things out. But LA is not for everybody. It is not easy. It is really, really fast. And the idea that you can do anything does not solely apply to you. It applies to everybody. And instead of being beloved, instead of being an emperor on a throne, I felt that that people are throwing roses at and praising and getting tweets and having all sorts of dignitaries line up to shake his hands. All of the great Lakers should have been there last night. Kareem's alive. He wasn't there, was he? Jerry West is alive, isn't he? Was he there? Jerry West is the damn logo of the league. He is arguably the greatest Laker of all time. He's the only guy to be the MVP of the finals when his team didn't win the championship. That's how good Jerry West was. Was he anywhere to be found? No, because you moved to a franchise which is a completely dysfunctional family. Right? Phil Jackson and LeBron, their people don't mesh because he basically told it like it was. Mitch Kupchak, he got sent out with the trash and now is in North Carolina with Michael Jordan. Kareem, totally aloof, not connected. Jerry West, helping run the Clippers and maybe running it better than the Lakers. After already helping the Warriors become a modern-day dynasty because he fell out of favor with Phil Jackson in a power struggle. Jerry West has done the opposite of helping the Lakers. He's helped everybody else become better than the Lakers. It's a mess! And here's LeBron, who has only been told how great he is. And I'll give it up to him. And this is what I've always thought of Tiger Woods. Like, it's really hard to be 16, 17 years old, being told you're going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, and living up to that, and not, unlike Tiger Woods, having any failings, you know, as a human being off the court. Like, there's no accusations of drug use. There's no accusations of womenizing. There's none of that stuff. Like, the only thing you can say about LeBron James is, man, he's not a very good general manager, and he kind of can be uncomfortable around people, and boy, he's done a poor job of leadership, and does he want to make the big shot? But as a human being, seems like a good father, seems like somebody who wants to make a bunch of money and do the right thing at the same time. But LeBron James has only been told he's the greatest, and he surrounds himself now with sycophants who tell him that he's the greatest. And he accomplishes something which is inarguably unbelievable. Think about this. LeBron James does not even love scoring. That's not even what he does. He fills up a stat sheet. Rebounds, assists. He's even said, I get the greatest joy out of seeing somebody else hit the big shot. And yet he surpassed Michael Jordan on the scoring list. And instead of being beloved for it, it reminded me of, do you guys remember the movie Gladiator? When Joaquin Phoenix returns home as the emperor. And remember, people didn't know that he killed his own father. That only the viewer knows. But he returns home as the emperor, and there's this huge crowd outside, and he gets greeted, and of course there's the grumbling of the senators. But he's in his own quarters, and he's basically alone. He has no one except his sister. And even his sister really is more into Russell Crowe, right, than she's into him. And that's what I felt like LeBron James felt last night. An emperor of a kingdom which is incredibly dysfunctional. And instead of being beloved for a remarkable accomplishment, he felt alone. felt out of place. Felt kind of unwanted. And I feel a little bit of sympathy for it.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
The team that I think gets, I've been the lone guy. I've been alone on this island, and eventually you're going to come around to it. I felt like I'm the only one who got the Gruden plan to begin with, knew that they were basically going you know, the bankruptcy route. They were tanking. And if, in fact, they pull off this trade, which is supposed to go down tomorrow for Antonio Brown, they've upgraded at wide receiver. They will upgrade their personnel, probably with their first pick, take Josh Allen, a kid out of Kentucky who's a freak athlete, who may not be Khalil Mack to start, but has that type of talent and will cost a fraction of the $90 million guaranteed that Khalil Mack was demanding before, when he landed in Chicago. And then if you can get Le'Veon Bell, you've upgraded at two incredibly important positions, quarterback and wide receiver. Meanwhile, you still maintain most of your draft picks. I think what they are doing is a smarter process than what the Lakers have done. Putting all of their eggs in the basket of LeBron James, who wants his own guys and the guys that his agent represents. And, oh yeah, by the way, is closer to being over the hill than he is to being in his prime. I'm not even a Raider fan. I call them the commitment to excrement. I pointed out that Raider games are only popular on Sundays because weekend furloughs for Raider fans, right? Like, I don't love Raider Nation per se, but I respect the plan and how they're sticking to it and all the bullets they took for trading away their two best assets. But they trade away their two best assets because the NFL is not about two primary assets. Look at the Arizona Cardinals. They got Patrick Peterson. He's a stud. They got Larry Fitzgerald. They got Christian Kirk. They got David Johnson. But you know what they don't have? Good football team. And Gruden is in the process of making them a good football team.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
He's a legend in all forms of media, right? Like, you hear him call games for the Chargers on radios, their play-by-play voice. You see him on the NFL Network as well. And if you live in Los Angeles or you've listened to Fox Sports Radio for years, their show used to be national as well. They are an institution in L.A. radio. The show is called PMS. That's Petros and Money Show. He's Matt Money Smith. He joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. And I wanted to have you on because I wanted to bow down to you. I wanted to say, you're smart. I'm stupid. What was the other part? You're
good looking.
You're good looking.
I'm very ugly.
I'm very ugly. Right? Yes. And the reason is, about 6 months ago, you and I were texting, or maybe it was a phone conversation, and I was like, I'm in on the Lakers, man. They're going to be good. They're going to make the playoffs. This is going to be great. And you're like, nah, those guys don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing at all. And you're right.
Man,
I'm wrong.
Never have I wanted to be, and this is so stupid, right? But it's true. Like, I didn't want to be right about that. I really didn't. It's just, man, I just don't. It seems like every chance they have to make a misstep, they make a misstep, right? And it's, everything is compounded. And man, the last time I was upset with Jeannie Buss was never, until the fake news thing. I mean, that really chapped my ass. It really did. Of all the things, of all the benefits that franchise has in its existence, its history, its recruitment, top five picks, one after another, a patient fan base, billion-dollar TV deal. And that's what you're going to throw out like that. I'm not kidding, Doug. That might be the most, sounding like a parent, and you're a parent, and many people listening are parents, like the most disappointed I've been in this franchise in a long time.
Okay, so if you're going to lay blame, where do you start? Start with the pen, like, because they're all to blame, right? Like, let's not just put it on LeBron. Like, it's a flawed roster. I think Jeannie's to blame for, you know, she hired these guys, and by the way, she hired Luke, but then there wasn't the support for Luke. Luke wasn't at the meeting with Magic with LeBron James, which I think is one of the first big flaws. The roster construction is screwed up, but LeBron is also greatly to blame. And then injuries and bad luck are to blame. Give me your breakdown of who deserves the most blame and then how it feeds down.
One, I think it's, and again, it pains me. One, I think is Jeannie. You know, you want to hire Magic because it had been a rough half decade and failures, the kind of which this fan base and franchise had never seen. I get it. You win the press conference, people get excited. Nobody was feeling Mitch and Jim as a front office team. So you win that. Great. But do your due diligence. Ask around the league. Get a GM who's a number two somewhere where they've proved their worth and understand what it means to sit in that chair. And instead she hired Rob Pelinka, someone who, I mean, you're in more NBA circles than I am. Have you ever heard a good word about the guy from other people? No. Like, that I didn't understand. So that's misstep one. Two, I'm trying to couch all my negatives, right? Because everybody likes Luke. He's a great guy. But if you're going to sign LeBron James, Luke Walton's not the right guy to coach him. I mean, you could see that from day one. That's just that did not line up. Much like David Blatt, when you hired him, you thought he was going to lift, you know, Kyrie up with a lot of these young assets that you were going to draft, Andrew Wiggins, and you were going to let a young team grow with this guy that had a great international reputation. And then you drop LeBron on him, and you know he's not going to listen to a word he says. So the genie didn't recognize that that was not going to work. And to get out in the media and repeatedly say, Luke's our coach. He's not going anywhere. I think to some degree, you know, wasn't worthy to coach him.
Can I just do elephant in the room here, though? I
mean,
elephant in the room is, how did we get to this place where we thought Jeannie Buss knew anything about basketball? Because Phil Jackson was her boyfriend? I get that Jim was a flake and that Jim wasn't doing a great job, but it wasn't like his dad knew anything about basketball. Like, his dad hired really good people, and they did a really good job. And, oh, yeah, by the way, they had Magic Johnson, and then they had Pat Riley. Like, and they didn't even really know what they had when they got Pat Riley, and he inherited Pat Riley, right? So, I mean, like, we operate as, like, well, you know, Dr. Jerry Buss was one of the great owners. The only thing great about Jerry Buss was he kept Magic happy by going out and partying with him.
And hired Jerry West.
Yes!
and that's it. And that's all you have. And I guess that's why I blame Jeannie. She hired the wrong people. You know, but you're right. And Jeannie would be the first to admit that. Anytime you bring her on, she would say, hey, look, I don't do basketball ops. I do business ops. And, you know, to her credit, she worked her way up through the organization and multiple organizations and community service and ticket sales and all of those things, and at least put the time in that Jim was not putting in. He was hanging out at the racetrack. So I think that's why a lot of people here in L.A. appreciated her, that she did do some work. But you're right. It's a fair counterpoint. Why should we lay blame at her when she's got no business making basketball decisions or hiring general managers? But I don't know where else to point. I can't point at Magic because what's he supposed to do? Say, no, I don't want the job? Of course he's going to take the job. Now, you can speak to his work ethic and whether or not he's really embraced and understood what it means to be a president of basketball operations, which it seems as though he doesn't. And when you talk to people that he's not around all that much, and isn't as invested as you need to be in order to compete with the other 29 teams and front offices in this league. So I guess that's our next step, right? That's where we're going to lay a lot of the blame with those two guys, Rob and Magic.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Matt Money Smith is our guest. If you live or have spent any time in Los Angeles, you know that at AM 570, they own LA Sports Radio in the afternoons. He and Petros Papadakis. And of course, you can see Money on the NFL Network as well. Last night to me, and look, I'm a native of Orange County. I don't claim L.A. because that would be being a phony, and I try not to be a phony. But I do know Southern California, but I also know what it's like to move back here. And I spent my entire professional life on the East Coast or playing abroad. And so when I moved back here the first time, this is in 2012, it took us like 6 to 9 months to where we finally figured out the pace and how everybody operates. We lived here for 2 years, then I moved back to the East Coast, and then, you know, a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, we moved back here again, and it's been kind of the same process, and even then, like, you do yearn for, whether it's the Midwest or parts of the East Coast, the fact that because there's not as much to do, there's more of a community. You can wrap your arms around people, you can have them over, you have more time, whereas you don't now, and I felt like last night kind of embodied that, where he comes into a place and he thought he'd be beloved, and they're like, yeah, whatever. Like, we didn't bring you here to beat Michael Jordan's scoring record. We brought you here for banners and for greatness, and we haven't seen it. And it felt like a very hollow accomplishment last night. Am I wrong to read it that way?
it's a great observation and a great analogy, or at least anecdote, and kind of describing it for people. And you're right. And I think the great misconception about Los Angeles, and I'm not a native. I moved here when I was 17, but I've been here for nearly 30 years, and I have lived all over. And I think that's the key for people listening that don't quite understand what this city is. It's giant. I mean, it is 20 million people when you really kind of get that circle going, and you're talking about a radius and how many people are included. So I've lived from the Valley to the West Side. I now live in Orange County. My wife is from Deep Orange County. So I kind of know, and I've even lived in the city itself. So they're all different. And I think what people think, and LeBron is probably included in this, especially because of why he moved here, at least one of the reasons why, they think it's Hollywood. They think it's stars. And people that move here fall into this trap, and they all move to the same place when they're in our business, the South Bay, Manhattan Beach, or the West Side. And they don't understand that that's not what sports in LA is about. It's about the Valley. It's about East LA. I would say the most dedicated Laker and Dodger fans are situated in the east part of the city. East LA is a hotbed for our fan base. I think it is the bedrock of Los Angeles fans. And these stars come and they start rolling around into studios and they make cameos and they assume that LA is Hollywood. And there's nothing that angers LA fans more than that, because that's not what it is. It's dedicated people that have had season tickets to Laker games for 30 years in their family, that have passed down three generations. And I know, because I had them for 7 years. I had Laker season tickets. The first thing I did when I got a job out of college, I bought section 21, row L, four seats from London Records. I had them buy them for me as a signing bonus. And I used to go to every one of those games, and I got to know the people around me, and those are the stories I heard. And people don't realize it's not Jay-Z and Adam Sandler and Jack Nicholson sitting courtside. That place holds 20,000 people. And I think they get insulted by Johnny Come Latelys, who assume that it's more about Diane Cannon and Jimmy Goldstein. And I think that may be what happened to LeBron. Now, look, if you're going to win and you're going to pull a team up from being out of the playoffs for five straight years, and you're going to continue where they left off on Christmas Day with the Golden State and finish with a four seed, then guess what? All's forgiven. But when that's not what happened, and you're out producing records with 2 Chainz before taking a day off against the Warriors, when your accomplishment is celebrated in a moment when a team is down 15 and for all intents and purposes has now been eliminated from the postseason picture, they're not going to embrace you.
Yeah.
And I think that's where people don't understand. No, these fans can be chappy. They can be red asses, and they can get nasty. And they got nasty with Frank McCourt with the Dodgers, and he had to sell the team. They got nasty with Donald Sterling and the Clippers and stopped going to games, even though it was very exciting there with that young team. And I think you're seeing it with the Lakers a little bit. This is kind of like their last straw. Like, hey, we put up with it, and we bought into your grow with the kids, Lonzo and Brandon and Kyle Kuzma, and we got all excited about that. And now this guy was supposed to be the final piece. And instead, they're all sad now because this guy doesn't like him. And he's out, passing Michael Jordan when he's down 15. And it's just, people aren't into it. It's weird.
Yep.
I never thought it would happen, but it is weird.
Listen, you guys got a great show. And this would be a great day for a great show, and you couldn't have encapsulated better. Matt Money Smith from AM 570, who they dominate in the ratings in the afternoons, and we appreciate you spending some time with us. Thanks so much, Money.
Sorry my answers are so long, but thank you for having me.
No, they're great. I'm going to come on your show, and I'm going to run through stop signs and run through breaks as well. That's what I'm going to do on my drive home.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Let's catch up with one of my favorite young players in the NBA, a guy who has rightfully earned a ton of respect around the league. He's John Collins from the Atlanta Hawks. He joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. John, how are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Good, man. What's this year been like for you?
It's been good, man. It's been a up and down year. Started the year off with an injury, but I've been able to come back and resurrect the season, I think, pretty damn well.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's, with a lot of playoff teams, or there's some like LeBron, for LeBron, people are saying, well, they're not in the playoffs, I shut it down. You didn't have any necessarily reason to come back, right? Just second year in the league, you've proven yourself as a double-double guy. But there was never any of the sense that you wouldn't come back and play this year for Atlanta. What's that like when so many people are like, you don't actually have to come back and play, and yet the inside of you, you're like, yeah, I'm always going to play. What's that like?
I mean, it's just I think it's just a professional thing for me. I mean, you know, coming into the league, you know, you have to prove yourself if you want to be considered, you know, an elite guy, you know, or one of the elite guys in this league. So I feel like it's just a thing of being a professional, you know, showing up to work every day and being ready to play.
All right, Trae Young, what's he like to play with?
Man, Trae's exciting, man. You know, I think me and him have a great connection, have great chemistry. So, you know, especially just me and him specifically, the 1-2 dynamic that we have is explosive. And he's really creative, you know, using our connection to get other guys open. So that guy's, you know, really crafty.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's just some, he's like an amazing player, but he's different from, I mean, maybe anybody outside of Steph, and maybe even more creative as a passer with Steph, in that you never know when he's going to shoot, right? As soon as he crosses midcourt, he might pull it. And then you don't ever actually know when he's going to pass because he has such incredible vision. How hard is the adjustment like? No one's disputing that he's talented, but it's got to be a bit of an adjustment to play that style of ball.
Not really. I mean, you didn't even really mention his lob throwing ability or his floater. His floater game is, you know, elite too. You know, it's his touch around the rim, is his ability to, you know, float over bigger guys. It's really impressive. So I feel like it's really been easy, and I feel like he can, you know, plug him in with a lot of guys, and he can play well with just about anybody.
Yeah, you mentioned the float. How do you know when it's for you and when it's a float? Does he say something? Like, sometimes you might be like, oh, that's for me. Wait, no, that's not for me. What's that like when you're rolling to the rim, you see the ball up in the air, and you have no idea if it's for you or for him?
I mean, if you're watching, sometimes you'll just see me jump because it's open. And the defense really can't do anything about it. So it's just like it's about having a window of his ability to throw it. So sometimes I'll jump and he'll throw it, or sometimes I'll jump and the defense will, you know, react as if Trae's going to throw it. He'll shoot a nice floater. So it's sort of like a cat and mouse game. Trae has to play and I have to play with the defense.
All right, so you got to tell me. I graduated high school and played in an all-star game with Vince Carter. And I almost went to Florida because they thought they were getting Vince Carter. Vince Carter is still playing and still playing well as a member of the Atlanta Hawks. You went to high school in the state of Florida. Like, how crazy is it that you're now teammates with Vince Carter?
It's real crazy to think, you know, we have sort of similar ties and stuff like that, being from Florida and stuff. And then now me just watching him growing up as a kid, you know, Vince Carter is an amazing athlete, probably the best dunker ever, I feel like, in NBA history. It's crazy to see him, how he's transformed his game from that to someone whose ability to stretch the floor and shoot three ball. And he's helped me out a lot with that, too.
Yeah, I mean, look, how does he do it? What does he do to take care of his body? Like, there's got to be some secrets there that you're going to take away.
You probably got to ask BC his true secrets, but I mean, we just see him in the gym every day getting treatment, you know, in the cold tubs, getting stretched out, doing stuff like that. So, I mean, maybe there's something else that he's doing that, you know, BC has his secret stuff that nobody else knows about, man, but that dude just, you can see just the transformative nature of his game and what he's been able to do, though.
So, how much grief?
Shout out to him.
How much grief did you get over the Wright brothers dunk when you got back to your own locker room?
Not too much grief, honestly. I feel like the guys were behind me, and I feel like, you know, although I didn't complete the dunk, I felt like, you know, the creative nature of the dunk and stuff like that, the guys really appreciated. And they also felt like, you know, the first dunk was, you know, judging correctly, in my opinion. And I felt like, you know, if I would have had a better score on that one, I think everybody would have forgot about the Wright brothers dunk to begin with. But,
yeah. You know. I mean, why do you think the first dunk wasn't as, because, I mean, it was crazy, right? You grab one side of the backboard.
Right,
like,
right.
It's weird. It's one of those things that I don't know if it translates, but you had really good dunkers as judges. I'm wondering why they didn't appreciate the athleticism, the skilled nature of that dunk.
Yeah, see, that was my thing. Maybe it was because I honestly don't know why. I can't tell you, but, you know, for me, what I can tell you is I was trying to go for something that, you know, nobody's ever done before, which was one. You know, I don't think I don't remember. I haven't seen anyone do, you know, grab the side of the backboard and dunk it. And I felt like maybe it was the timing or whatever the case may be, but, you know, it was judged, you know, a 40, and it kind of knocked me out of the competition to begin with. You know, I know other guys were going to come out with some other stuff.
Yeah.
And have better dunks. So that's what I mean when if I would have, you know, got just, you know, 45 or something and I would have been pushed to the second round, I feel like the Wright brothers dunk wouldn't have been taken as such a, you know, the dunk that it is.
John Collins joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. For your money, who's the best team in the East?
I think Milwaukee just because of the depth.
It's also, they're also very unique styles, right? Like you have first the Sixers who kind of like invert their offense, right? Like their point guard doesn't shoot. So, and then they spread everything else around. And then occasionally they go work through Embiid. You have the Bucks who, you know, they put their center, Brook Lopez, outside shooting threes, and so the lane's all opened up for their point power forward who's 6'9", right? Then you have the Celtics who, you know, there's Kyrie, and then, you know, Horford can stretch the defense as well, but they can beat you in one-on-one. They can also create mismatches in pick-and-roll game. And then you have Toronto, who is really good team, and then they play through Kawhi in big games, which is different from every other team. Like, they're all unique styles, but you think Milwaukee's the toughest because of the depth? Because the depth of shooters or just their overall depth?
I just think their overall depth of guys with playoff experience or guys with, you know, just NBA experience. You know, I think that comes into a factor. And I think also Coach Bud being with Giannis, those two obviously working very well together. I think Boston is definitely going to be another team that's going to be sort of a sleeper because most of those guys on that team have playoff experience as well.
John Collins joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Got to be amazing for you. You know, when you grow up and you're big, everybody tells you to get your butt down at the block, right? Go down. Right. You want to play big-time basketball, you got to score at the block. And now, because the way the game's changed, you're going to, and you've continued to develop into being a three-point shooter, right? Like, that's part. When you're awake, you took one three-point shot your entire career. I mean, you know, one.
To say it for me, at least, you know, growing up as a bigger kid, you know, or at least, you know, with the NBA the way it used to be, if you were a bigger guy, at least a guy like 6'8", 6'9", and you had that mid-range shot, the mid-range shot was, you know, a lot more valuable. You know, so guys, or for me at least, you were working on that mid-range shot, and that was going to be, you know, your money shot. You know, as the game evolved and as it progressed, you know, now it's the three-point shot. So, you know, you have a lot of guys who, you know, or most teams don't really like guys taking those mid-range shots anymore, and it's now becoming all threes or mostly threes or, you know, shots at the basket.
How long does it take to get comfortable taking threes in a game? Like, you're taking almost four a game now. You're taking three a game now, and you're shooting a pretty good percentage. How long does it take to be like, all right, now I'm really, really comfortable taking this shot from this distance?
I think it was, you know, just midway through the season. I think, you know, you saw when I came back at the beginning of the year, my shot kind of struggled, you know, coming out of the gate with the injury. But as I played more and as, you know, I got more comfortable, you saw my shot starting to fall. And I think it was, you know, that, you know, the couple games where I see, you know, I go 2-for-2, one-on-one or 2-for-2 and 1-on-1. And that gives me sort of confidence to know, you know, I'm not shooting too much, but when I do shoot, I'm accurate. And, you know, some games I let it fly. And, you know, it rewards me and it pays off when I'm efficient and when I take smart shots, you know.
Well, you guys were the first to kind of expose the Lakers, right? Like, the Lakers beat the Celtics, lost to the Sixers. Like, all right, those are two playoff teams. Then they go down to your place, and you had 22 and 8, and you guys stomp them. What did you see? Like, did you know that there was – did it feel like there was a chemistry issue there or just feel like they thought they were going to mail it in and win the game?
I don't know what they were thinking. I think they came out. I think they actually played us pretty well. I think if I do remember, it was they praised pretty well, and then all of a sudden we blew them out the water. So I don't know what happened, but I feel like, you know, that's something that they got to deal with. But I feel like they have enough guys around them that they should be able to, you know, play better basketball. But it's different situation. You know, a lot of guys in trade rumors and trade talks over there, so I know it could be tough to play under conditions like that.
Well, listen, it's good to have you back. You obviously played exceedingly well against the Spurs. We appreciate your candor in breaking down other teams, and can't wait to catch up with you. Maybe help us throughout the playoffs. You get a little time off afterwards, and you'll break down some games for us. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you for having me on.
All right, John Collins of the Atlanta Hawks joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.